Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thank you for joining me live here on Real Liberty Media. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the support we get from the podcast. Here it is, Wednesday night. We're doing a live show. It's fantastic. Oh my gosh, the weather here in Oregon has just been crazy. So beautiful. Blue sky and sunshine. I've just given in to it, you know. I really am a Oregonian, love the rain and cold, but, you know, you got to take what you get. There's nothing you can do about the weather unless you're the federal government, of course. I'm sure you can do some stuff out there. But, anyway, let's get to the notes. I think I'm starting a tiny bit early. Nope, right on time. I'm loving it. Get the show notes up here. I got a couple of things I want to cover. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. And if you all are on a social media site, would you please post that the show is live or post where people can go to get the show from podcast? And, you know, we'll grow the show and we'll grow the site that way, and that'll be a good thing for everybody, I hope. It should be. You guys can catch Hal Anthony's show on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern. He is fantastic. 2 hours of nonstop information. And I really wish you would give him, just go check out his show. He has a ton of followers. You know, gets his information out on a couple different platforms, and we're just grateful to have him here on Real Liberty Media, you know, putting it up live. That's awesome. What else we got going here? So this is kind of funny. You know, some people, you have a podcast, and some people ask, you know, well, do you think you're something? And I say, nope, I'm just a guy having fun, making light of the darkness. And that's it, man. When I think about doing the show, I just think, okay, I get to go have fun for an hour just doing what I want to do. And that's what I'm doing, you know, making light of the darkness for the most part. Oh, and I have to give you a tiny heads up here. In the studio here, the man cave, Pebbles is chasing a flying insect. So she may make an appearance one way or another. One way or another. I already finished my hot drink, so I am hydrating with something cold. I hope the audio is good. There was a little report earlier that maybe the audio wasn't working. Everything on my end shows it's working. I have a report that the audio is going out to the show, so let's give it a go. All right, so Behind the Woodshed, Hal Anthony, Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern. You can always catch the Redneck Dentist podcast on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. And if for some reason I can't make that, we do something else or we just don't do a show or whatever. I want to get back to doing more daily content, but I'm just not there yet. We'll get there, especially during the wintertime, when it's dark and you can't do anything else outside. But man, with this, certainly right now with this weather we're having in Oregon, you know, it's too nice. You got to be outside doing something, having a good time, getting some work done, chores. Today I did a bunch of stuff in town. We took some posts over to Rochelle's brother's house. So he's putting up a, I don't know what you would call it, but it's basically a railing for some wisteria. And actually the railing is already there. It's just rotted. So he's replacing some railing. So as wisteria just continues to grow over this beautiful little garden spot they have. And so that was nice. Man, it was just foggy, just gray and foggy here today to start today. And then about 1 o'clock, 1:30, man, when it burned off, it was just like summertime again. This blue sky, sunshine, and warm, which was nice. But, you know, you had to shake off the morning chill first, and that took a little while. Let's see, where's my, oh, there we go. Okay. So, let's see, I wanted to talk a little bit about surviving a nuclear war, and let's face it, there's no surviving. I mean, just live your life, do your thing, take care of yourself day to day. I mean, the world is a crazy place right now. I don't know if there's going to be a World War III or not. I don't know if there's going to be a nuclear conflict or not. But you know, if there is, nothing you can do about it. I'm going to talk about a story a little bit later about how Anthony Fauci rose to power. And I just want to say, like, right off the bat, we're going to learn something. Well, hopefully, I learned something by reading this article that I didn't know before. And it really made me think about some things. Like, I remember back in 2001 when the United States was attacked, air quotes, 9/11. And I remember the aftermath of that and what happened with our civil rights. And I was thinking back then, under Republican administration, I was thinking, you know, we are going to regret what we are doing right this minute. You know, all the securities that were then put in place to supposedly fight terrorism. And I think you're going to see the same kind of thing now under a Democratic administration. Some powers that were put into place and that were some that were put into place extremely recently that I'm going to talk about today, that, you know, we're going to be sorry for. We're not going to really think that was a very good idea in the long run. I want to bring up one more window here. No, that one. All right. So, anyway, you're going to learn, hopefully I'm going to pass on some information to you today that you didn't know about or don't know about. Maybe you speculated about it before. I didn't know about it at all, so I'm going to be interested to see, you know, what kind of reaction we get from this information I'm going to pass along today. You know, Fauci's a dirtbag. That's the bottom line. But I think you're going to be shocked. I should go right into this story, but I got some other stuff I want to talk about first. I think you're going to be shocked when you find out, you know, where his power came from and who was responsible for it. It was really kind of shocking to me. Hang on one sec. You know, got to do the thing. Okay, I'm back. Okay, I want to cover these kind of short, you know, topics first. Elon Musk apparently is all set to buy Twitter, or maybe they finalized the deal on Twitter, or they're going to, or, you know, they've agreed to kind of cut out all the BS, and he's just going to do it, which should be really interesting one way or another. You know, if he actually makes it a free speech platform and allows everybody to have a conversation, I think it'll be really good for everybody. You know, there won't be any more silenced conversation. Well, you would hope, right? The reason we don't really use Twitter is because there is too much censorship on there. Same with Facebook, same with YouTube. I don't personally use them to get my message out because, I mean, I post things on there like, hey, the show is live, or hey, you can get the podcast now. But as far as actually putting content on those things, we really don't do it. We just promote what Real Liberty Media does and what we're about and when we have live shows and where you can go to get podcasts. But maybe, you know, maybe in the future we'll start posting if it truly is a free speech platform. I'll be interested to see if it turns out that way or not. The one thing is, you can look at Elon Musk's history, especially recently. I mean, he helped Ukraine, the Ukrainians, by giving them access to Skylink internet, you know, satellite internet, so that they could, you know, survive, basically, so that they could pass information to each other so that they knew where attacks were coming from or whatever he did. He just turned on Skylink for the Ukrainians and he helped out there. He's helping out the Iranians who are protesting because this woman didn't wear her headdress correctly. And apparently, you know, he wants to help them have free speech also. He also gave Hurricane Ian survivors access to Skylink because, I mean, look at it. It got wiped out. You know, a lot of the infrastructure in some of those areas is gone. So the one thing I would like to say about that is beware of wolves in sheep's clothing. And I'm not saying I know one thing or another about Elon Musk, but, you know, one thing I've learned my entire life, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. So, you know, go forward with open eyes and open mind and pay attention to what's going on. And will that deal happen? And will this open discussions be allowed and censorship stop? I don't know. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. I think it would be really handy right at this time to have open conversations. I think there's a lot of people who vent and they want to vent where they can be heard by more people. And those platforms just don't allow it because they don't want the truth to be heard. They don't want you to be a free thinker. They don't want, you know, they want you to listen to their message and only their message. You know, only the stuff that they agree with. Everything else is disinformation or is not suited for their community or community standards, okay? So whenever you have somebody who's preventing you from learning something that may allow you to make different decisions, they're censoring. They're censoring information coming into you. Yeah, Hollywood. I wanted to talk about Hollywood a minute because, okay, you know, I like to get a lot of independent news sent to my email. And a lot of times when I go to those sites, there's like the headline that they sent me. And then there's, you know, 5, 6, 8 other headlines that they want me to check out. And there's always one on Hollywood. It seems like no matter who, what news agency it is, it seems like there's always something on Hollywood. And I don't care. I literally don't care about Hollywood. I don't think any of those people are newsworthy one single bit. The sad news is that there are a ton of people that think what those people do is newsworthy and worth like reading about or following or, you know, paying attention to. Like, I was going to give an example and I thought, well, then it would seem like I actually care. I don't care. Honestly, none of it. Don't care. I think they're mostly idiots, especially when they start talking about the environment and green energy, and you know they're just flat hypocrites about it. I'm gonna tell you what's coming up on one of my next shows. I'm gonna lay out specifically how and why California is the worst environmental state in the United States of America. And I don't think it's a very difficult argument to make. In fact, I've made it in my mind already. I have some notes about it, you know, kind of briefly printed up, printed, notice handwriting. And that was just the beginning. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, there's so much more stuff that I can put in this. Okay, I'll save that for later. Let's see. So Hollywood, yeah, who cares? Unfortunately, there's a ton of people that do. OPEC, of course, I heard this, 2 days ago? I heard OPEC was going to cut back 2 billion barrels of oil a day of production because, you know, they're not getting enough money for the oil that's out there. And I thought, God dang it, I got to go fill up the truck again. And I just filled it. And it's stupid of me to think that way because it doesn't, that sounds crappy. I don't care what the price of gas or diesel is. If it's available, I'm going to go get it. But I heard that news and I was like, oh, I got to go, I should go top off my tank because prices are going to go up. And like literally before, I mean, I think I was working, so it would have been the end of the day. Like before I could get to a gas pump, it had gone up 43 cents per gallon here in Oregon. Isn't that crazy? And the bad news is, for us here in the United States at least, is we have no bargaining power under this administration. This administration is so sold on green energy, they absolutely don't care about fossil fuel prices. They don't care. They don't care how high it goes. Matter of fact, it works in their favor. They don't care how high it goes because if it means you drive less, well, then they've won. They have their little green agenda. That's what they want. So, I mean, if the world plays into that fantasy, it just works out for them. I don't think it's going to work out for them past November, the first week in November, to be honest with you. And I really hope that there's a big difference. I really hope that everybody who's pissed off about fuel prices actually votes to change that. However, whatever way of voting that is. I really don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian. I don't care, as long as they do the right thing for the American people and for the world, for that matter. I certainly don't want the United States forcing the rest of the world into some other kind of vaccine, which I think is coming, another story I have today. So, look, you know, maybe we should just move on into the meat of the show today. So the first story I want to get to is this deer and Kevlar, because you always hear this, don't you? I mean, I don't know if you've listened to many of these comments, but you always hear people when they're talking about banning assault weapons, which is kind of crazy when they say assault weapons, because if you get down to it and ask them what is an assault weapon, you know, they're always going to point to a black gun. That's kind of their thing. You know, it's a black gun. That's what an assault weapon is. You know, guns that people hunt with can be black. As a matter of fact, I don't want to mention what I do have. I'll just say, okay, so let's say at one time I had a 300 Winchester mag. That's a big gun, man. I'm telling you, that thing, the bullets on that thing are gigantic. Well, in my opinion, I know there's bigger. I've seen them. I've shot them. But that freaking bullet is a gigantic bullet with a ton of kick to it. It's a black gun, but guess what? When I pull the trigger, it shoots one bullet. Is it an assault weapon then? Because I'll tell you about another gun I have had in my past, and that is an AR-15, which most gun banners will say is an assault weapon. Well, here's the thing with that gun. It's black. It's a 223 round, very fast bullet. Oh my goodness. It's one of the, well, in my opinion, one of the best freaking rounds for killing stuff because it's so fast. It's just, I know what people are thinking, and maybe people who don't have a lot of experience with guns are thinking, aren't all bullets fast? Yeah, all bullets are fast. Here's the problem. Like, if you take the 300 Winchester mag bullet, it's kind of got a lot of weight to it, so you put a lot of gunpowder behind it, and it's fast, but also has some, you know, different up and down movement, like rise and fall coming out of the barrel and then gravity affecting it on the other end, than this 223 round, which is very small, very fast, and doesn't really have a lot of rise and fall between leaving the barrel and gravity taking over and pulling it to the ground. But that AR-15, guess what? When I pull a trigger, it fires a round. It doesn't fire multiple rounds. Same as my 300 Winchester mag. When I pull the trigger, it fires a round. Yes, my AR-15 holds more rounds, but they can both be reloaded very quickly. And, you know, you can fire rounds as long as you can pull the triggers. You know, there's no end in sight. So what's the difference between those two weapons? I'll tell you what it is. One can be politically attacked, you know, so that they get their gun agenda going, let's say. And the other one is like, oh, that's a hunting weapon. Well, guess what? I'll tell you. At one time, I was a little more active with a hunting website here in Oregon. I won't mention it. I should, because it's awesome. But one time we all decided, hey, we're going to go to Eastern Oregon and kill coyotes. Because it's just a thing you can do here in Oregon. You can go out to wherever and, you know, kill nuisance animals. Now, you know, being a true environmentalist, like, I love the environment and I want it to be around a long time, and I also want it to work in a balance. Taking out a few coyotes is not a bad thing, but taking out, like, all the coyotes would suck. Because they do stuff, like they eat rodents, and they take care of some other business out there in the woods. They like to eat dead animals. So if a deer dies for whatever reason, and, you know, the coyotes will find it, just like the buzzards, and they'll eat it and clean up the environment. I mean, so they have a purpose, but, you know, there comes a time. Like right now, I'm telling you, I think I've talked about this a few times in the last few weeks. Like, the teenage coyotes are out now. Like, the ones, they kind of get booted from the pack. And they're a nuisance, let me tell you. Because they're not smart enough yet. Like, they haven't had enough encounters to know that they shouldn't be, like, in your chicken coop, for example. Or they shouldn't come through your yard and grab a chicken and take off with it. So they will do that, which is really annoying, because your chickens are out just doing their thing, trying to make some eggs for you. And, you know, and a coyote comes along and, you know, takes one of your chickens right in broad daylight. And they don't care, because they don't know that you want to kill them. And if you don't have a if you don't have a gun on you when they make that pass through, well, they're going to get one chicken, and probably the next day they're going to come back and get another one. Sometimes the same day they'll come back and get another one, depending on how hungry they are. And you got to be ready, because they're just going to come the same way they did the first time, and they're going to make the same approach and attack and escape. And if you're not ready for them, you're going to lose chickens until number one, they're full and, you know, no longer hungry, and they wander off looking for sex with another coyote, or until you shoot and kill them. I mean, really, they're gonna keep picking off your chickens until something interferes with that, whether it's natural or it's man that drives them on. So yeah, right now, you know, the damn young, yeah, teenage coyotes are on the loose and causing trouble. Oh, there's Pebbles making a little. I don't know if you heard that or not, but okay. So President Joe Biden's most recent speech on gun control showed once again that he has little respect for gun owners or the Second Amendment. Consider, for example, where Biden mocked gun owners for being afraid of deer and Kevlar vests. And I just want to tell you something. This is a little side note. You should be afraid of deer without Kevlar vests because they will kick the crap out of you. Or if it's a male, they'll use their horns and tie you up if you're in a vulnerable position. Or let's just say, for example, this may have happened to a friend of mine who tried to jump on a doe in the middle of a wheat field way back when he was a kid, and that deer just kicked the living crap out of him. He was looking for food. He wanted to kill the deer with his bare hands or a knife, and that deer just jumped up and just kicked the crap right out of him, and the deer got away, which is cool. But, yeah, he said, don't ever think that you're going to whoop on a deer with your bare hands, because they will probably, you know, beat you to death or kick you to death. Let's say, oh, back to Biden. Yeah, he says that people are afraid of deer and Kevlar vests simply because they want to defend themselves and their families with the same guns that law enforcement officers use to protect the president and his family. The examples below represent only a fraction of the stories on defensive gun use we found in August. And this is really kind of interesting. Some good stories in here. You know, and it just goes to show you, there, you know, every single day in this country, people use guns to save a life, their own or somebody else's, or to stop some real evil from happening. So on August 2nd in Auburn, Washington, a gas station clerk fatally shot a 19-year-old who tried to rob the store at gunpoint, police said. So here's a kid with a gun. 19-year-old, hey, you're a grown man. You know, I guess you took a grown man, you know, consequences for your actions. August 3rd, Indianapolis, a homeowner's daughter and daughter's boyfriend were sitting in a car just outside the house when a teenager with a gun and several others tried to rob them. An armed individual intervened and shot at the robbers, fatally wounding the teen, police said, although it wasn't clear whether the armed person was one of the two victims or the homeowner himself. The others, the robbers fled. August 7th, Middletown, Ohio, police said that they wouldn't charge an Amazon delivery driver who shot and wounded a man who attacked him with a knife while high on drugs. Unfortunately, the Amazon driver was fired, which I got to tell you. You know, if you work in a place that says, like, no firearms allowed, well, I probably wouldn't work in a place like that unless I could figure out a way to make sure that I had a firearm allowed. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just take your firearm with you. Take something concealed properly. I absolutely refuse to be a target. And I wish everybody else would refuse to be a target also, but it's just not like that right now. Although, man, from the looks of some of these stories, I mean, that was August, August 7th. Here's another August 7th, West Palm Beach, Florida. A concealed carry permit holder fatally shot a gunman who brandished a short-barreled shotgun at a family gathering and threatened to shoot the crowd up. Oh, well, gone. August 12th, Jessup, Pennsylvania, a woman shot and wounded her husband after he shook her and threw her to the ground during an argument, bruising her head and ribs. Police said the argument began after the man came home from a friend's house and his wife tried to de-escalate the situation anyway. In Milwaukee, August 15th, a woman fatally shot an intruder who broke into her home while she was taking a shower. How about this? So this chick made sure that she had a gun, like, within reach somehow while she was in the shower. I think it's awesome. The woman's two teenage children began screaming, so she raced to her bedroom to grab her gun. She found the intruder in the hallway being attacked by her two dogs, then shot him multiple times because he wouldn't stop coming at her, police said. Could you imagine just how terrifying that would be to hear your kids screaming when you're in the shower? And, you know, when kids scream that, like, honest-to-God scream, not the, oh, so-and-so hurt my feelings, or they're hitting me, or, you know, that kind of, you know, the kind of childish scream that kids do, but the terrifying, my life is in danger scream. And here she just went straight to her bedroom, got her gun. Thank God she got her gun before anybody else. But, you know, and let me say this about this whole argument, too. There's this big movement out there, you know, to fine parents for having their gun available, which is so stupid, if you ask me. Because what good is a gun, a home defense gun, if number one, you have to unlock it somehow? Criminals aren't going to wait for you to unlock your safe. Or some of these automatic guns have a cable you can run through the barrel and lock it. And you can imagine if you're shaken up and you're trying to get your damn, you know, cable lock out of your gun barrel before you can slam a magazine in it and slam the slide forward to load a round and shoot somebody. They're not going to wait for that. Number one, if they're armed, they're probably going to shoot you while you're dicking around with a gun that's, you know, ridiculously safe. Or number two, if they're not into violent confrontation, they're going to haul ass because they see you putting your gun together. No, you need to have a gun that's ready to go. It doesn't need to have a bullet in the chamber, although that's my preference. I don't do it either. So the most I have to do to ready a home defense firearm is, you know, get around in the chamber. And I think that that's safe enough. You got to teach your kids and grandkids, in our case, you know, that thing is, you are not allowed to touch that thing. Like, you'll lose fingers if I see you touching this gun. Because they have to know. I mean, you have to teach them respect for those firearms and let them know, this is serious, man. It's no joke. This is not a toy. And we teach them all the time, even if they're playing with toy guns, we take some of that fun away because we don't really let them get away with shooting at each other like Nerf guns or airsoft or whatever. And I'm sure they'd love to, but, you know, you have to teach them proper gun safety from day one, from the time they're aware that there's a gun in the house. Luckily, they can't get to any of them here. Shit, I should knock on wood because, you know, as soon as I say that, something will happen. No, it won't. Not going to let it happen. Trust me. Well, anyway, in this article, it goes on. There's like 5, 6 more. Let's say August 28th, Detroit. Witnesses told police that when a 19-year-old gunman who had already killed 3 people, seemingly at random, shot and wounded a 4th victim, an armed bystander intervened. He drew his own gun and shot at the gunman until he fled. You know, and he probably missed the guy. Because if you don't shoot often, I'm telling you, it's just terrifying when you actually have to finally pull your weapon on somebody. It's not, for most people, it's not all, you know, peace and quiet in your brain. You're shaking like crazy. And he probably did shoot at the guy, but may or may not have hit him. But anyway, this is a great story because there's a lot of arguments there for having a home defense weapon, you know, or a store defense weapon. Who wants to be, I don't want to be a part of violence in any way. I don't want violence to happen in front of me. I don't want somebody being brutally violated in one way or another in front of me. And I'm telling you now that I've had a heart attack and I'm 64. Yeah, I'm less willing to, you know, get physical with you if you're causing problems, which means I'm going to go to my self-defense. And my self-defense is a handgun. So, yeah, I'm not really in the mood to stir stuff up. And I know you got to wait until you feel there's a threat to life, your own or somebody else's. That's fine. I can wait. I can wait. It's not a problem. Hey, I wanted to share with you guys this interesting interview that was brought to my attention. It's Jordan Peterson. And listen to this audio. It's just a recording. It's 3 minutes and 25 seconds. You'll hear the interviewer, who has kind of a heavy accent. I think he's from Iceland. And then Jordan Peterson, of course, has a bit of an accent. But listen to how he handles this kind of line of questioning. It was fantastic. It literally gave me chills to listen to this commentary that he had and to feel his emotion. So I hope you enjoy this. Let's do this.
On the trans issue, because you have been vocal about it, written articles and tweeted, is there not a part of you that maybe is afraid that in 30 or 40 years it will be like having been against gay marriage or gay people?
No, absolutely, 100% not.
Oh. Most Do you of think the, this time is different? Or
It's definitely different. Most of the kids who are being surgically mutilated would have grown up to be gay. And the gay community is starting to wake up to that. And so now if you're a 10-year-old boy and you're ambivalent, let's say, or 12-year-old boy or girl, and you're ambivalent about your identity and perhaps about your sexuality, we know the data suggested that a large proportion of kids with that gender or the body dysmorphia, gender dysmorphia, would grow up gay. But most of them would settle into their body, like 85% of them or so who have gender dysphoria at the clinical level would settle into their body by the time they're 18. And now, well, a good number of them are slated for hormonal and surgical mutilation.
Do you not think that we as a country should tolerate the changes, or do you think
no,
we should?
No, I think we should ban the conversion of minors to people of the opposite sex, so to speak, if they're under 18. And I think we should restore their ability to sue medical professionals who dare to intervene.
But adults, do you think they should?
Adults, that's a whole different story. You know, most people, if people want to go to hell in a handbasket in their own particular way, they have the right to do that. That's a different issue. But minors, especially minors, period, no. No, and the fact that we are even having this discussion is just strikes me as preposterous. All sorts of Western countries have just moved to ban so-called conversion therapy, which wasn't a problem to begin with. There was a handful of fundamentalist Christian, mostly, therapists in the U.S. who purported to offer services to aid homosexual individuals who perhaps wanted to go straight. And the gay community was upset about that. And now we have legislation banning conversion therapy. So you can't even, if you're a therapist, you can no longer really even question the identity claims of your clients. But you can convert kids surgically. So tell me how we can be having this conversation even. Oh, it's just beyond comprehension.
Yeah, I think people have very differing views. A lot of people just want to tolerate it and say this is fine.
Tolerate what? Castration and double mastectomies for 13-year-olds?
Well, yeah.
No, seriously,
oh, yeah,
man.
Yeah.
That's not tolerance. That's crossed the line. That is not tolerance. That is an inexcusable silence on the part of the majority, the vast majority, who knows this to be wrong in the deepest possible sense. Most of the bloody Nazi propaganda that led to the extermination policies at the beginning of World War II were predicated initially on compassion and tolerance. So this whole, we're being compassionate and tolerant, it's like, no, you're not. You're aiding and abetting the surgical mutilation of minors. That is not compassionate, and it's not tolerant.
Man, is that powerful or what? And so few people are actually speaking the truth like that. And we need more people like that. This guy has been through so much in the past few years, and he is an unbelievable voice of truth. I love to hear when he speaks about anything, honestly. And I was watching his interview with Stella Assange, and man, that was an eye-opener. It's about an hour and 40, 50 minutes long, something like that. It's well worth watching. I love the guy. Absolutely fantastic. And yeah, let's quit. How about this? Let's stop killing infants 9 months old, whether they're in utero or out of the body, birthed. How about we start with not killing nine-month-old babies? And then maybe let's stop mutilating 13-year-olds and 12-year-olds and, you know, giving hormone therapy to 6-, 7-, and 8-year. How about we stop experimenting with our children, for God's sake? It's kind of the most disgusting thing that we've done, honestly. It's like, I think once we got to the point of devaluing human life to the point where you could just decide to have an abortion just because you didn't want a baby, and it didn't matter what time during your pregnancy that happened at, you could just like pull the plug on that. I think once we devalued human life at that point, it's pretty much the gloves came off. That's pretty much when the gloves came off, and it was just like, yeah, you know, you can do whatever to your kids, which is crazy because, you know, if you see some kind of other abuse of your children, you know, if you spank your children in public, you're going to have some Karen out there who's going to, you know, call the authorities that you were abusing your kid. And I'll tell you, kids need boundaries. They need discipline. Sometimes you got to spank them, yeah. You know, sometimes you might have to slap them, honestly. I don't care what you think about me. I really don't. Yeah, raise your kids without boundaries and see how that works out for you. I've seen how it works out, honestly. Personally and you know, not in within my realm of ability to control, but near it. You know, I've seen what happens when kids are raised with no boundaries. I guess for some families, that's fantastic. That's just the way they do things, but doesn't usually work out very well in the long run. Yeah, but I would sure like to see more people speaking that truth. And, you know, yeah, here we are at election time. There's a lot of stuff up in the air, man. The assaults coming on both sides. You know, all the attack ads, you know, because whether you're, you know, one side or the other, if you're not winning at this point, well, you got to bring out the attack ads. And, yeah, they're ugly. You get to hear a lot of ugly stuff, and you know some of it isn't true, because you can say anything. You can literally say anything in an election commercial, because I think it's somehow covered under some other, you know, like you can defame people, like you can literally lie about people because it's just a campaign ad, you know, that's just the way it goes. Let's get into this a little bit. So I was kind of blown away by this. Let me put my notes up here again. The rise of Anthony Fauci. So I'm going to read the first paragraph to you, because I don't know if you can see that or not. Well, probably you can. If you have me up full screen, you can probably read this. It says, Dick Cheney, as vice president, was responsible for putting all biodefense research under the auspices of Dr. Anthony Fauci and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, making Fauci the sole decision maker on biodefense, now listen, and scientific research. I just want to note here, that doesn't mean those things together, biodefense and scientific research. That actually means those things separate, biodefense and scientific research. Now, the scientific research could actually mean, scientific research on biodefense, but how do you study biodefense? Yeah, you got to actually, hey, go away. You're blocking my screen. Okay, off it went. So let me just read these bullet points because, number one, they're pretty damn interesting. America's focus on biosecurity began in earnest during the second Bush administration. Dick Cheney, as vice president, was responsible for putting all biodefense research under the auspices of Dr. Anthony Fauci and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Since 2003, Fauci has been responsible for civilian biodefense research and early development of medical countermeasures against terrorist threats, foreign and domestic, from infectious diseases. I put that foreign and domestic in there myself. There's no meaningful administrative distinction between biodefense and scientific research in general, and Fauci has been the sole decision maker for all of it with no oversight. Fauci has followed in Cheney's footsteps, using the same tactics to deceive the American people into war. Cheney leaked false information to the press and then used that press coverage to justify the invasion of Iraq. Fauci supervised the writing of a paper denouncing the lab leak theory and then used that paper as evidence that SARS-CoV-2 arose naturally. Isn't that interesting? Now, when I said earlier at the beginning of the show that, you know, after the 9/11 attacks, I wasn't keen on the civil rights that they were taking away from us. Didn't care that it was a Republican administration that was doing it. It wasn't right. There were other ways we could have dealt with that at the time. But as you can see, over now 20 years, how this has grown and exploded and actually kind of backfired in our faces. COVID-19 is a war against the public for the purpose of forcing us into a new world order, a one-world government run by a globalist cabal where biosecurity is the justification for the removal of constitutional rights and freedoms. And I have a little section here. I said, hang on. Okay, let's time out. Okay, hang on, I'll let him out. Hey, Bear, come over here and speak into the microphone. Come here. Come here. No, come here. No, no, come here. Come here. Bear. Come here. Be a good boy. There's nothing going on. It's all okay. They're not going to come get us right now live during the show. They'll wait until, you know, they can get me with some weird bioweapon. Oh, hey, live studio. Okay, I might have to let him out. Let's. Do we have some music? Well, how about this? Oh, and then he stopped. Hang on. Hang on. We can get right back to it. Thanks. Thanks, Bear. No, that's enough. Seriously. That's enough, Bear. Wait, where was I? Dang it. Okay, I want to get down. Oh, no, I was on my notes. Where's my notes? Here we are. Interesting who the players are here. Just 6 days after 9/11, Joe Biden, then chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, had led a hearing on the threat of bioterrorism and the spread of infectious diseases. Subsequent to that hearing in June 2002, President Bush signed the Biodefense for 21st Century Directive, the aim of which was to advance a comprehensive framework for U.S. biodefense based on the assumption that America could be devastated by a bioweapons attack. The directive outlined essential pillars of the U.S. biodefense program, including threat awareness and vulnerability assessment, prevention and protection, surveillance and detection, response and recovery. The year before, in June 2001, senior policymakers had also performed a two-day tabletop simulation of a smallpox attack called Dark Winter. And then I have this other part I think is very coincidental. In 2002, the Bush administration quintupled biodefense spending to $317 million. That same year, severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, broke out in China, big surprise. And in 2003, just as SARS was being contained, H5N1 avian influenza emerged. Yeah, don't let a created disaster go to waste, right? And then this is where it all went wrong. So since 2003, Fauci has been responsible for civilian biodefense research with a focus on research and early development of medical countermeasures against terrorist threats from infectious diseases and radiation exposure. What's more, as explained by Rinsberg, as far as NIAID was concerned, there was no meaningful administrative distinction between biodefense and scientific research. With the stroke of Cheney's pen, all United States biodefense efforts, classified or unclassified, were placed under the aegis of Anthony Fauci. So seriously, man, like, it's no coincidence that the names around in 2002 and 3 are the names that are around today. Well, except for the ones that have died or have gone quietly into retirement. Yeah, and Fauci is the one person with all that power, and that is the craziest thing. I was shocked when I saw that it was Dick Cheney who actually put all that power in one person's hands. And then, man, Fauci has played it like perfectly. Like kind of learned from his mentor. And that's kind of scary. Oh my goodness. Who did? Fauci won public welfare medal last year, awarded by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. Well, that figures. That would not surprise me a bit. Back to my notes here. Oh my goodness, that's sad. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes. I think that's going to be enough to cover this story. Yeah. So I read this headline, and I'm one of these guys. I think because I worked in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and I worked around a lot of inmates, I learned a lot of stories and a lot of things from inmates. Let me tell you, honestly, inmates are not idiots. I mean, some of them are extremely bright. So when I read this story, I was like, okay, there has got to be something more to this story. Like something bothered me about the headline. Let's bring it up so you can see it. Make sure it's on the show. Yeah, FBI agents raid home, arrest pro-life advocate in front of wife and children. Okay, so I'm just going to tell you. Like my time in the Bureau of Prisons, which was, I don't know, between 16 and 20 years, I kind of forget how long. Well, let's figure it out. 89 to 2005, so... Yeah, like 16 years, something like that. Something in that vicinity. In all that time there, I mean, you would get to talk to some inmates, and some of them are just playing the system, like, you know, they didn't commit whatever crime, they're innocent. I mean, some of them are innocent, I'm sure. And some of them would just tell you straight up, you know, yeah, this is what happened, you know. And you would kind of find out the real story of what happened to an individual to end up in federal prison. So when I read this story, I'm like, okay, I got to find out what this guy did that would have brought 25 to 30 FBI agents storming his home in their Teenage Mutant Ninja outfits. This guy must have done something, right? Like in my mind, I'm like, you don't waste the budget to have 25 to 30 federal agents show up at a dude's house unless he did something horrible. or borderline horrible, or you thought he did something horrible or borderline horrible. Well, so many times lately we hear about the FBI raiding or arresting Trump supporters or anti-Biden admin criticizers like the sheeple I sometimes join in believing. I thought to myself, there has to be a reason why the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation showed up to arrest this guy. Of course, my initial assumption was that Richard and Cranium showed up at this guy's house, showed their badges, and asked him to put his hands behind his back, and that he was under arrest. I mean, they need a reason to arrest you, right? Well, that's not exactly what happened. The subject in question is a pro-life or anti-abortion activist. By pro-life, I mean he doesn't support abortion, and he has done his part to make up for some children lost to abortion by fathering 7 children. He walks the walk, for sure. Apparently in October of 2021, you know, that's a long time to let an evil bastard like this walk the streets, a 72-year-old man was harassing Mark's son. Mark is the guy that they went and arrested. A 72-year-old man was harassing Mark's son, who Mark would take along with him when he would go to protest against pro-abortionists. The 72-year-old man was using vulgar language and a couple of times charged or moved aggressively toward Mark's son. Now, you and I might agree that taking your children to protests that have great potential for violence from either or both sides is not the greatest idea. Mark and his son were there. I have no idea how or why a grown man, 72 years old, would try to intimidate a teenage boy, or why he didn't direct his attention to the father, Mark, but this grown man, 72 years old, focused his anger at Mark's son. Apparently, when the man charged at his son, Mark pushed him away. Twice. The man fell back, the article says. He didn't have any injuries, but tried to sue Mark. The district court in Philadelphia investigated and dismissed the charge earlier this summer, and Mark Hawk is his name. His wife, Ryan Marie, told LifeSite News. So how did the FBI get involved? According to the federal court documents, Hawk was arrested on the charge that he assaulted a 72-year-old volunteer whose name is not provided at the Planned Parenthood Elizabeth Blackwell Health Care Center. Funny that they call that when it's not, doesn't take care of the health of the baby at all, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, twice on October 13th, he assaulted this guy. He was indicted for violating the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, which makes it a federal crime to use force with the intent to injure, intimidate, and interfere with anyone because that person is a provider of reproductive health care. Well, they're not. The Eastern District of Pennsylvania U.S. Attorney's Office wrote in a Friday press release, so abortionists are given federal protection from the use of force. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that interesting that if you are in the business, yes, business of killing babies and infants, you are protected from violence. Like special federal protection, not the protection that we all have against assault. No, if you kill babies, you get special protection. Why was that law put into place to protect abortion clinics, but not anti-abortion clinics? This guy wasn't even a provider of reproductive health care. He was a volunteer escorting people in and out. By the way, funny that with all the money baby killing clinics have, they have volunteers outside their clinics. Isn't that crazy? They get so much money from the federal government and other corporations that donate money so they can stay in business killing babies and infants. But they still, you know, won't turn away free labor, of course. Doesn't that protection also give the volunteers some empowerment? Now they don't have, now don't they know that they can assault and harass anyone, and if there's any resistance or pushback, the feds will come in and press charges? How did the arrest actually go down? This is the wickedest, this is the wickedest that is going on in the country today. 25 to 30 federal agents apparently prepared for war entered, oh, we're dang it out of time. Hey, thanks you guys for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dennis Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.